It's the last day of Hanukkah, and it's the first day of the week that we're having Shir. So we have to discuss a Medrash on Hanukkah. Tomorrow we'll resume our Parshas Vayigash. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things we read today, some of the topics we read today, so it's Hanukkah, and closing out the Korbanos of Nesiyim. There are three striking statements in the Medrash about this entire Parsha of the Nesiyim, not just the segment we read today, the entire segment. The famous Medrash, which Rashi quotes, Laman is Darzu HaNesiyim. Why do they even offer all these presumably extraneous gifts? You don't necessarily need wagons. Okay, someone's going to have to donate a wagon to carry, but the plates and the spices and the extra korbanos, these are all extras. These are all, they're not vital to the Avodas HaMishkan. They're not donating the gold and the silver for the Aron, for the Bezich. I mean, these are not vital, elementary aspects of the Mishkan. The very famous Rashi is that when the entire process of donations began, Yud Aleph Tishrei, the day after Yom Kippur, the Nesiyim said, let everyone bring whatever they have available, then we'll fill in the rest. They were probably reckoning that these poor former slaves traveling through a desert couldn't come by some of these precious metals, copper, right? Copper is used in semiconductor chips. We're going to find that there's no Intel warehouse in the desert. So they probably said, let the average citizens donate what they can, what they will, and we'll fill in the rest. And within days, at least weeks, everything had already been donated. We'll read about it in Mitzvah Shem, like Kaleam Mehavi, everyone had already donated everything possible. And the Nevi'im, the Nesiyim, as we say, were left high and dry. They were boxed out. They couldn't participate in this great project of building the house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So right there, there's a lesson in life. Don't wait. Opportunity comes knocking. Religious opportunity comes knocking. Try to seize it. Don't wait. I won't say it's laziness, but it's a little trace of haughtiness maybe that we're not part of. When it comes to serving a Kodesh Baruch Hu, there should be no haughtiness. There should be no difference in rank, no differences in privilege. I'm greater than another person. I'm of a higher station. I'm more prestigious. Let other people. There's no business class on the flight to Olam Haba. Olam Haba, only one class, economy class. Everyone sits in the same seat. So when it comes to, there's a little bit of a let them donate, we'll fill in the blanks, and because of that, they were boxed out. But what's equally impressive is their response. Sometimes, when you feel that you've lost an opportunity, you get guilty, frustrated, pessimistic, or what you do is you apologize, just to exonerate yourself or acquit yourself from guilt, because it's hard to feel guilty. So there are three ways to respond to a failed opportunity, to personal failure. One could be frustration, pessimism. Another could be apology and explanation, where you're negotiating with yourself. And it'd be very easy for them to explain and to acquit themselves, like within a Nesiyim. We're very busy. We have an entire people to lead. We're just rebuilding the national fiber after 200 years of slavery. It's legitimate for us not to be involved in this aspect. We are involved in our parts. I'm the yeshiva bacher. I don't have to fill in the blanks. You know, I'm a very busy family man. I don't have to. And the Nesiyim are basically saying, no, we want to be part of that also. And they're looking for a way to recover. And these korbanos are their recovery mechanism. They say, we'll find a way to be creative and we'll show ingenuity. And we'll donate some gifts that maybe are extraneous. You don't need them in the Mishkan. And they're absolutely functionally necessary. But they can enhance the Mishkan, they can enhance the inauguration of the Mishkan, and the Agolos are obviously very, very technically necessary to transport from place to place. So the third way that you respond to a failed opportunity is saying, you know what, I'm going to try to repair it, and I'm not going to excuse myself. And it's very easy to cook up excuses for yourself, especially if you're a Nasi, who's very, very busy during the weeks and months leading up to the Mishkan. So there are really two snapshots about the Nesiyim. One is the laziness, we call it laziness, but slight tardiness, slight hardiness, slight, let them bring and we'll fill in. And the second aspect is that they recover rather than feeling guilty and depressed, being overwhelmed by that guilt and depression, or by just apologizing, like we're seeing, we have other things to attend to, more important things to attend to, but they find a manner of participating in this great project. Okay. Who was the first Nasi? We didn't read today. First Nasi was Nachshon Ben Aminadav. Why? Obviously, so here's where Chazal fill in the blanks for us. We don't see this in Parshas Bishalach, but Chazal fill in the blanks in Balosha. Oh, you know why Nachshon was first in Balosha? Excuse me, in Nasa, because he was first in Bishalach. Because he left to the sea first, so therefore he started this whole process. Now, what's impressive about Nachshon is He gets to pioneer something, to start something fresh, to start something new. He's the first person to bring the carbon. It's always exciting in life to find opportunities to be a pioneer, to do something that people haven't done before. Now, we'll talk about this in a moment, not in a haughty way, an egocentric way, but to find a dynamic, still unformed reality that you want to be part of, a revolution, a change. And he has that pioneering spirit, and he has a pioneering spirit because he's mostly Nefesh and B'Shalach, because it's not about him. He doesn't want to be a pioneer for fame and glory. He wants to be a pioneer because he wants to build something that will last and build something for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So without B'Shalach, he won't be first in Nusso. It's not that, oh, we'll choose a person who's a pioneering spirit. Pioneering spirit coupled with a level of dedication in Mesiras Nefesh, even at the point of self-sacrifice to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But think about the next couple of years as you're choosing where to live and choosing which profession and which country to live in. If I turn the clock back 40 years and I was your age in Yeshiva, I felt that there was something that was being built under construction in this country in general, as opposed to the United States where I grew up, which is very stable and stagnant. And what was I going to really add to, open spaces, both literally and figuratively? And here I felt that I was part of some project in building my people, not just the ideology of redemption, not just my love for living in Eretz Israel. But even if, let's say, I lived in Costa Rica or something, just taking all the other ideological elements out of the equation, some other country that was in its embryonic stages, it was still emerging, and I could have a hand in building the country and contributing in a way that. So as long as it's the same Shemayim, it's a good. I mean, pioneering spirit can sometimes be self-infatuation and self-aggrandizement, but as long as you're trying to build something for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for Am Yisrael, try to find, like, how can you be a pioneer? What projects are left for our people in the state of Israel that we've already completed that you can be involved in? And you'll find that there are many, many projects, both in the Beis Medrash, in the world of Torah, as well as in the world of Am Yisrael. So try to see if you can find, because it creates a drive and an excitement and a vision that it's harder to capture if you're involved in just walking down paths that have already been paved by others. So Nachshon is an important lesson for all of us. And a final lesson, which to me is probably the most important lesson from the Parshas Nesiim and for you as well, is, I'm just paraphrasing the Medrash, I won't read the entire Medrash. What's striking is the length. It's such a long parsha. It's a fiction. It's a delusion. It's a mirage. And Nusso is the longest parsha. Yeah, Nusso is the longest parsha. But it's not really the longest parsha, because so many psukim you just repeat a Karas Kasev Achaza. We can all, rifle it off. I mean, some places they actually let little children read the Parshas Nesiim on Nisan, when some people are minhag to read Parshas Nesiim on Nisan. It's not really halacha, it's just a minhag. Even children, even 8-year-olds can read, even 10-year-olds can read Parshas Nesiim. So it's really a fiction that is so many psukim. There are many psukim, but how many? I guess there are four or five times 12, at least 60 of them are repetitions. Which begs the question, why is the Torah wasting so many words? And it just said that each brought the following carbon. It's identical, not just the words, but the trap. You can find an extra word, hikrivet carbono, and SNL has an extra hikrivet carbono. Okay, see, we have to quote an SNL Ben Suar from Yisachar. But why is this guy repeating all these stuff? The answer is as follows. This is really important about Avodas Hashem. There's no question that each person brought a different carbon, because each came from different shvatim. And when they walked into the Mishkan with their wagons and with their plates and with their spoons and with their serizims, they all had different dreams and hopes and symbolisms and meaning. If you came from Yisachar, the Sanel had one set of imagery that he associated, and Nachshon had a different set of imagery, and Gamliel ben Pedatzur, Abidan ben Gidon, they all had their different motives, and they were representing their distinct and respective Shvatim. But in order to be different, they didn't have to behave differently. They could just infuse different emotions and different expectations, different feelings into the same activity. So to the naked eye, just looked the same. Yeah, you're all the same people. You all look the same. And when you got to know them, you said, well, what were you thinking when you brought your carbon to Sanel? What were you thinking when you brought your carbon to Gamliel? What were you thinking? They had very, very different responses. And there are two lessons here. First of all, very often we have a bias and we see people that don't look at it. Oh, all Haredim are the same. All Chinese, all Asian people are the same. Well, when you get to know people, they really are different. And don't judge a book by its cover. We get to know people and get to know the people who really are individuals. It's even societies that tilt towards more conformity leave room for individualism. Remember, individualism and conformity is not a polarity. It's not plus or minus like a battery. It's a cursor. You move across the cursor. No one should have absolute individuality, individualism, should absolute conformity. It's a question of where you draw your cursor. But second of all, for you, not just how to judge people, but in your own growth. as I mentioned before, you're growing now. You want to find your own identity. You want to find your own self. Who are you as a person? Who are you in Avodas Hashem? For some people, ironically, it drives them away from religion in general sometimes, but certainly from Shemiras Halacha. Because Shemiras Halacha feels very, very conforming, and it's identical, and it's similar. So what drives people out of Avodas Hashem? What drives people, as they say in America, OTD, off the derech, as the Yeshet, Chazer B'Sheila. So obviously, there are a lot of factors. You don't want to judge it or simplify it, but sometimes it's psychological pressure, sometimes it's philosophical dilemma, sometimes it's just pure frustration and desire. A lot of things that draw people away. But sometimes you'd be surprised. People have a hard time fitting themselves into a box. They don't want to feel like I'm part of a box. They want to feel different. And that desire to be different leads people away from experiences that feel very conforming. And what I'd like you to do is to find enough space in Avodas Hashem for your own identity, for your own ideas, for your own spirit, for your own imprint. But every morning you put on the same tefillin that the guy next to you puts on. Every Shabbos you keep Shabbos in the same manner. And that's such a powerful lesson from the Nesiim. These are leaders. They're all different people. These are not little children. They're leaders, well-developed personalities, coming from different shvatim. But they don't have to express those differences by showing off to other people. Oh, you have Karas Kesef, I'll have Karas Zav. You have Karas Zav, I'll have Karas Super Zav. You have Kryptonite Karas. Oh. It isn't a match to try to show off to people and be different. How can you find? It's a really hard thing to achieve. It's very easy to migrate to the poles. It's very easy to feel conforming and to try to eliminate personal identity. I think there's some types of Avodas Hashem today in which people are encouraged to limit their personal identity, their personal expression. It's very easy to feel and amplify your personal identity. Who am I and how am I different? How can you blend the two? How can you feel that you are unique and different and individual and have a certain set of talents the Spirit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu endowed you with? And then follow Sif, Reish, Yud, Gimel, and Shulchan Aruch the same way the person next to you. That feeling that you have to stand out. A lot of people are looking for chumras to stand out. A lot of people are looking for just to be different. Just so people should know that they're different. Now, here I am, I'm different. If you have confidence inside of you, you know you're different. You don't have to announce it to other people. You don't have to use halachic deviation or religious deviation just to prove that you're an individual. Okay? Tomorrow, back to Parshas Vayigash. Have a Zos Chanukah Sameach, everyone. Yes.